Welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're going to continue our discussion with William Keller, Democracy Betrayed, and we'll take your phone calls this hour as well, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And we are back with William Keller, Democracy Betrayed. When we get to your calls, I'd be very curious to see if you think that our democracy has been betrayed. I think it has, indeed. Now, the question to William, will it get worse or will it go the other way?
Well, I think that has a lot to do with how accurate the information people can get is. And the problem with getting information to people, in a democracy, it's usually very easy to get information to people. But the problem in our democracy is what I call secrecy and the classification system. And if it's all right, I'll say a few words about that.
Please.
The role of secrecy and the official reason for it is simply to protect the national security. Now, I had a top secret clearance and various nuclear clearances for 10 years, but I have to tell you that almost all of the information, classified documents that I reviewed, didn't have anything to do with national security at all. So security means that there's no public record. So it's not accountable the way that other things are in our society. So it leads to a lot of waste. The intelligence agencies write about 50,000 intelligence reports a year. And it leads to fraud, too, because it's very hard to audit secret intelligence budgets. I mean, there's...
Well, we're missing, trillions of dollars, aren't we?
I don't know how much we're missing, but it certainly is a lot, and it's just unaccountable because these budgets don't appear in the national budget. They're just blank pages. And it also leads to a lot of abuse because the classification system is used to cover up problems like misconduct of individuals or cost overruns on big budget items. So, you already brought out the fact that since 9/11, the budgets have increased by a factor of four, and it's something like $120 billion a year, but we have no idea how that is divided among the many different secret government organizations. We do know that hundreds of thousands, perhaps even millions of people work in the surveillance security sector. And astonishingly, we know that 1.5 million people hold top secret clearances today. And you have to ask, what are all these people doing? And why do we need so many? You know, there's only about 3 or 4 million people in the government. Why do half of them have to have top secret clearances is the question. Now, the question always comes up, is the release of top secret and classified information, is it serious? How serious is the unauthorized release?
Like Snowden stuff.
Absolutely. For example, it could be very, very serious, George. Agents could be killed, for example.
Yes.
Or if it's a nuclear secret, the secrets could be revealed to a rogue state. So there are certain things that need to be held very closely. But in actual practice, only a very few classified documents are actually important. Let's bring up your example, Ed Snowden. He stole 1,700,000 NSA documents. That's national security classified documents, of which he released about 200,000.
So why didn't he release all of them?
Well, he's still got a million and a half to go. I don't know.
Is he still ongoing releasing things?
He could at any time. I haven't seen a release for a year. But anyway, he revealed the existence of many widespread surveillance programs, like the prison program or the X-Key Score or Tempura, which one of them read your emails. And the interesting thing is that not much happened. Okay, 200,000 documents fly out the window to the press, and very little happens, except we learn that the National Security Agency is spying on us.
Right, which we always knew.
Yeah, and that the high-tech business sector was helping them. Let's get another example. Army intelligence analyst, Private Bradley Manning.
Chelsea.
Chelsea Manning, yeah. He released 750,000 military-related documents.
See, soldiers could have gotten killed with that.
But not much happened. That's the thing that's just scary. I mean, that is this trivial information or what's going on? That, so to me, that's why the issue of whether or not Hillary Clinton had a few classified documents on her private server was not really an issue, you know? To me, and this is going to sound very strange, I'm a very patriotic person, by the way, but the fact is that the release of classified information often promotes democracy because people get to know what their government's doing. And that means that when they know, at least they can have an open debate about it.
Let me ask you, let's counter this with looking at Russia for a second. Twofold question. Number one, if Kim Jong-un would threaten Vladimir Putin like he has threatened President Trump in this country, what do you think Putin would be doing right about now?
To me, Putin is somewhat of a mystery. I think what he is doing is he's trying to, I don't think it's outright militarism. I think he's trying to restore the Russian people's sense of identity.
Right, but I think if he were threatened like Kim has threatened us, he would have attacked him by now.
He might, although, he's awful close there. He's got a border.
Well, I still think if he were provoked, if he were attacked, if he were pushed, if videos were made of Russian aircraft carriers being destroyed by nukes or
sure, that would do so. But here's a very key point. I also have done a lot of work in the area of nonproliferation and proliferation. Nuclear weapons can never be used. They are not a war-fighting weapon. They're a war-deterring weapon.
Exactly. It's a weapon of mass destruction.
So when we begin to say, well, we could take them out with a few nukes, that's just a completely insane thing to talk about.
You're taking out the entire country, practically.
You take out the whole country, and you know what happens if you fire too many nukes off, and this is something we've only learned in the last few years, is the atmosphere ignites around the Earth.
Yes.
So you really don't. There's a great book called Whole World on Fire, and explains how that works.
They were afraid when they developed the atomic bomb for World War II, Oppenheimer and groups, they were afraid that the entire atmosphere from just one was going to ignite.
Right. And what would happen if you blew off a whole bunch of them is not first it would start massive fires everywhere, and then the whole world would just be on fire, and you might ignite all the oxygen as well. But it's a terrible thing. So we don't talk about using nuclear weapons. We talk about not using them, and they're the kind of ultimate deterrents. Now, this thing that's been going on with the Kim dynasty there, Kim Jong-un and his father and grandfather. It's been going on for a very long time, for almost 20 years now. They've been working the nuclear thing one way or another.
And yep.
We have never, this has gone on.
We never stopped them.
Democratic presidencies and administrations, Republican administrations, we just never had a way to do it. And somehow they have gotten a whole lot more advanced technology than they had.
I'm going to make a prediction, William, right here and now, that if he does one more ballistic launch test towards a country, like towards Japan or towards the islands of Guam, I think we're going in. That's my guess.
We might do something, and if it was a conventional attack, it'd have to be pretty good, because even though it's old Soviet equipment, that line, the parallel there, 42nd parallel, it's just has guns on all sides of it.
Absolutely. There's enough there to hurt some of our 35,000 troops and the South Koreans who are in Seoul.
Well, yeah, Seoul is within range of the artillery, and there's about 17 million people there. So, and if you've seen the city, it's a jewel of a city, very modern, extreme.
Well, let me ask you this, and we'll go to some calls who are lining up to talk to you.
Sure.
Based on your research that you put together in the book, Democracy Betrayed, are you saying that this is a bad thing or a good thing for us right now?
I think that it is a threat to our democratic system at this point, and that we need to take the intelligence community and the what I call the complex and just ramp it down to just about 9/11 levels below that.
Mm-hmm.
We know a lot more now. we've been woken up. It was the wake-up call from hell, and we did wake up. We're a lot smarter than we were, but we don't need to be organizing large parts of our government around us. We don't need to be engaging in endless foreign wars to track down the last terrorist.
Yeah, and staying there forever.
Yeah, we don't know what a terrorist is anyway. You know, we don't have a way to define it.
You don't.
I mean, everybody knows it when you see it. I think the guy in Las Vegas was a terrorist. You know, I mean.
Well, in some form or fashion, he was.
Well, he sure would have felt like that if you were at the rock concert.
You sure would have.
Yeah.
You sure would have. I mean, to me, the definition of terrorism is merely that, to instill terror. Doesn't right. matter what your ideology is.
Or why, you know, what the purpose, if it happens, it happens. And there is always going to be some level of random violence in our society. We know that. And we do tolerate a lot of gun violence, you know. 10,000 people this year have been killed by it. You know, I'm not taking a position on that one way or the other for the purposes of this program. But, you know, you could, since we have so little terrorism in this country, it's time to go back and venerate our democratic institutions and our first principles and, you know, take back democracy, you know, for people like you and me.
Well, and we don't see terror in countries that aren't involved in other countries.
Well, you see some.
But not a lot. Not a lot.
In general, there is a terror, counter-terror, terror dynamic where you know, the terrorist does something, then we do something to them, and then they come back at us again.
That's right. It never stops. Now, thinking back to what Eisenhower said and the quote you used about the industrial-military complex.
Yep.
If there were no pure terrorism out there, if there was none, do you think that the special interest groups would create the illusion of terror in order to keep the game going?
I think that's exactly what they are doing. And I think there are a lot of politicians that frighten citizens saying, you know, we've got to be tough on terrorism or they're going to be here tomorrow. I mean, I can remember two years ago, they were saying that, you know, 300 Americans were going to come back from having fought with ISIS and they were going to fully trained and equipped and they were going to attack our cities. Well, that didn't happen. You know,
yeah.
So I really think that, you know, while we have to be alert and alive and realize that we no longer, that the two oceans around us no longer really protect us militarily, and we've got to do what we can, I do think that there are many private interests that really want to keep the fear of terrorism out there. For instance, there's a $100 billion market now, or will be next year, I guess it'll rise to that, in surveillance equipment.
It's huge.
Those guys are special interests. It's cameras and now it's facial recognition. You know, the Prime Minister of Australia, Mr. Turnbull, has just put out an order that everyone's driver's license, a photocopy of it, has to be sent to him, that information, so that they can begin to read it into retinal scans. So they'll be able to find people, you know, using that kind of face recognition
yeah.
technology and retinal scans and all kinds of biometrics. I think that's kind of a scary trend, and, well, for a lot of reasons, but probably shouldn't get into it at this point.
To the calls now we go. Tom in the Bronx in New York. Hey, Thomas, go ahead.
Yes, I'd like to say that all these ISIS and other terror groups in the Mideast, when they fired Saddam Hussein's army, this was the basis for all these groups.
That's right.
That went on the rampage. And if they, like, take the communists, when they were first in power, they didn't go after the Kazakhs. In fact, the Kazakhs were their biggest enemy. But what did the communists do? They said, you work for the Tsar, now you work for us. And they had them as part of their army, their early army. And that's what they should have done in Iraq.
Well, let's
they
get your...
kept the army intact.
They didn't trust the army, but you're right, Tom, and let's get your take on this, William. They should have let the people ease into what was going on, except they were all out of jobs, teachers, doctors, military people, and they turned on us.
Yeah, well, you know, I think once once we had destroyed the governing infrastructure, and you know, we basically took the Sunni minority, it's about 20% of the population that was running things, and threw them out of the government, and the Shiites came to power. And the problem was that a lot of these guys, these Sunnis, were military and they were trained. And so when they were thrown out of power, a lot of them went into some of these groups you were talking about, and they understood logistics and how to use weapons, how to train people, and how to command. And that's why ISIS and some of these groups did so well at first, because they had these trained military people.
Right. Yeah. Mike in St. Louis, take it away, Michael. Go ahead.
Hey, Matt Hawk, how's it going?
I'm doing okay, Mikey. Thanks.
Listen, I've been listening for years with you here when you're in St. Louis.
Thank you.
Good guest here.
Thank you, my friend.
One of the things about the Las Vegas shooter, I think there was more than one. If you listen to the recordings of the shots, one person couldn't get that many shots off, even with the special clips. I think you're going to find, in the next couple of days, that there'll be more than one shooter involved. And maybe that other shooter may have killed the one that they found dead.
You might be right. There were two broken windows up there on the 32nd floor, which was interesting. And either he ran between them back and forth, or there was another person stationed at the other side of the window. There were reports, of course, by those on the ground that there might have been other shooters there, too. Who knows? I hope they get to the bottom of this one, William.
Well, you know, I think that if you've seen some of the footage, you see the FBI just crawling over every little area. And they'll find out, I think, once they get back to Guantanamo get back to their headquarters and
Quantico.
Quantico, and begin to go over all the material that they've collected. They'll be able to tell if there was a second shooter. I think it's an interesting theory, because it did seem to me like that was rattling off pretty fast. And
well, I'm interested, too, in the woman who apparently told people on the ground before the shooting occurred, a lot of people are going to die here. And that was a very interesting take. So who knows how many people were involved in this thing?
Yeah, you just don't know. It could have been a lone wolf, and they may have had some support as well. It is actually hard to see how this guy could have gone on for years and years and years and collected an arsenal like that and didn't ring any bells.
No, exactly. Or how do you get all these guns up into your hotel room over the course of several days?
Yeah, I think they're heavy, and I guess you could just bring in more suitcases, you know.
I mean, when I go to Vegas, I go to a certain place, and you have to show your room key, which is a card. You have to show that before you even get to the elevators. And if you're holding anything, they look at you. And, in this case, this big bag. Stay with us, William. We're at the break. We'll be back with more. Welcome back. William Keller with us, Democracy Betrayed. William, by the way, where do people get your book?
Oh, I think the best thing to do is just go to Amazon and just put in Keller, Democracy Betrayed, and it'll pop right up.
Super. You've been writing books for a long time now, haven't you?
Yeah, this is number 7.
You obviously enjoy it. It's a lot of work.
I do, but, you know, I get a lot of satisfaction out of it.
Before we go back to final calls, William, where is this all heading for us, in your opinion, worldwide? I mean, we're not the only country doing this. What's going to happen to the entire planet? Are we going to be surveilled and watched for the rest of our lives?
Well, you know, here's what concerns me. Most of the world is not free. Most of the world cannot get information. If you just take two countries, take China and India, you know, you don't really have an open society there and the way we do, and you can get caught between the security services very easily, and you can't get a trial. That right there, that's 2.5 billion people that don't live the same way we live. But what I see as I look at various countries in Western Europe, in Australia, in the United States, is more and more integration of private sector surveillance technology and the things that the country does, the state government. I don't mean the United States government. I mean the federal governments of these different countries.
Yeah.
And so I'm concerned that as the information technology revolution matures, that the governments will pass laws, as they are doing, you know, counterterrorism laws, which will gravely restrict the freedoms and the speech of Americans and West Europeans. We're, after all, we're a big minority. We're about 15% of the world population. We're the only people that really live with any hope of freedom and liberty. So that those are our foundational values. And I think they're under attack, and that that people really should start to begin to pay attention and do something to sort of reverse the thing. Otherwise, the way things are going, otherwise, you know, the American experiment, it's not very old in the terms of history. It's only 250 years. You know, there's been governments around for 5,000 years, and there's never been anything like this before, and it might just be an experiment that fails.
It could be.
And it might fail because we were unable to live up to our promises of an open society, to the Bill of Rights, to constitutional democracy, and to rule of law. And that would be because the certain parts of the government would be taking things into their own hands. So my view is that it's not too late. We really can do things in the United States, and I could suggest a few things that people, you know, individuals can do if you'd like me to do that.
Please do that, and then we'll take the calls. Go ahead.
Well, just very, very quickly, we're seeing the rise of lots of popular movements these days. A good example is the activism surrounding environmental issues. Now, this led to increased awareness and to the major governments of the world adopting the Paris Accords. Now, that's a big deal. I think that we could also have a movement that focused on our freedoms and our liberties and how they're being strung out. And in this case, we're talking about an oversized and largely autonomous security industrial complex, and there needs to be an organization and activism in favor of liberal democracy. And by liberal, I don't mean liberals versus conservatives. I mean the liberal democracy of Thomas Jefferson and Alexander Hamilton and a few others. We're facing, I think, nothing less than a threat to our tradition of freedom, a threat to our values of America's founding fathers and to our constitutional democracy. So what can we do? First, get informed. Find out as much as possible. Despite its secrecy, information can get pried loose from the classification system with lawsuits. You know, the ACLU does a good job, and under the Freedom of Information Act, and books get published. So the main idea is to understand that core American values like personal privacy, your home, rule of law, are under attack today. It's pretty subtle, but they are. And they're under attack by powerful and well-heeled intelligence state within the state. So I think, you know, you can take it from there. We need to organize as people, and we also need to vote for people that will make a statement to the effect that that liberty is liberty must be privileged over security. Security will always be important, but liberty will be more important.
What would our founding fathers be doing now? Would they be going crazy?
It's hard to say. You know what when the Constitution was written? What do you know what the population of New York was?
When the Constitution was written, probably about 20,000.
You're absolutely right, 25,000. How'd you know that, George?
Now you find that in the subway.
Yeah, you do on a good day. And the population of the biggest city was 30,000. That was Philadelphia. So we're talking about a country with only a few hundred thousand people. But they came to some very pure principles, you know, about how to conduct a government and how to organize a society. And so I would like to stick with those principles until we can find some better ones. That, after all, that's what makes us all Americans, you know.
That's right. All right, to the phones we go. Alvin is with us in Fresno, California, west of the Rockies. Alvin, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
All right. Yeah, I just wanted to address something. I was talking to your screener, right? We kind of got into a little debate, but I was saying, like, I've been seeing mad evidence of about the Vegas shooting that's not being, like, showed or told. The story's not being told on the mainstream media, like Fox, CNN, et cetera.
Okay, and what is that? What is that story?
That story is, okay, check it out. My wife's cousin, police scanner. This is a police scanner, right? Vegas, because I know people in Vegas. They're saying that on a police scanner, they're looking for one male and two females. that were shooters.
All right.
I've seen video that show shootings happen in other motels around the same time, but only the Mandalay, however you say that hotel name?
Mandalay
only
Bay.
That one's being, only that one's being talked about. So I'm like, to give the ones with these private interests, our government, it's sad to say, the benefit of the doubt, huge mistake.
Well, let me say this. There may have been more than one shooter. There may have been. They haven't released that to us yet. The sheriff today made a remark that he finds it impossible that this guy, Stephen Paddock, would be able to do all this by himself. As far as shootings at other casinos that night, I'm not sure that happened. That we probably would have heard about, William, would we not?
Oh, yeah, I think definitely it'd just be a matter of the record. But, I think we're just going to have to wait until the details of this seep out. I don't think they want to move too quickly in informing the public because they don't know who is involved and they don't want to ruin their case.
So true. Greg in New Jersey, it's your turn, Gregory. Go ahead. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, gentlemen. George, a comment and a question from Mr. Keller?
Yes, sir.
Sure.
Comment. We've heard the figures that they spend on this stuff every year in our country, so one-tenth of that for 1 year could shore up our electrical grid.
It sure would.
Gotcha. The question I have for Mr. Keller, in 1993, I had the privilege with much of my friends in Manhattan to hear the great social commentator Noam Chomsky of MIT, who was, among other things, in very detail as he usually would speak about things, was saying, well, the Soviet Union's gone. We need a new boogeyman. We need a new enemy. They have to manufacture something to keep the military-industrial complex in place. And the whole thing with terrorism, I think, is exactly that. We make Saddam Hussein into this giant, boogeyman, if you will, Al-Qaeda, all this other stuff. In reality, there's something called the Project for a New American Century.
Mm-hmm.
Our business people want to grab the Caspian Basin. They want to grab all the energy in the world for their private profit. I think that's where this is going. We're just the peasants, like George Carlin would say. What do you think? What do you know about the new Project for a New American Century, Mr. Keller, and the idea that this is just a made-up boogeyman to keep the powers that be in power?
Well, I know a lot about the Project for a New American Century. It was that's the name of a document that was published about 10 years ago, and it was kind of a blueprint for how the United States should gain more power and restore itself. And I agree with what you said. I think the more really profound thing that insight you've given us, and I would agree with it completely, is that once international or global communism was gone, we needed an enemy. And if you look at what happened in defense circles during that period between the end of the Cold War and the beginning of the War on Terror, you find that Washington's kind of drifting. People at the Pentagon don't really know how to organize or what they're going to do. Do we need the capacity to fight a two-front war? Those are the kinds of arguments you were getting, right? And on and on, but they didn't know. But once 9/11 happened, the whole country, the military apparatus, the internal security apparatus, this whole complex I've been talking about, started to build and turn toward terrorism as though it was something like communism. And I have to say that terrorism and communism are very different kinds of things because there's no consistent ideology in terrorism. And maybe there wasn't in communism either, but they had Karl Marx and they figured it out pretty well. It didn't work. They tried it. But I think that we mistakenly did find an enemy. I mean, the enemy found us. And then we really turned our attention to it. And you have to remember that just prior to 9/11, there were a number of other things that happened, like in 1998, the embassies in Tanzania and Kenya were blown up.
Mm-hmm.
And the U.S. coal was attacked, and a lot of sailors died. There were four or five ones right there. And also the World Trade Center was bombed a few years earlier. Before 9/11. So we should have really known that something was going on, that we'd made some people pretty mad, but they're different people. It's not like communism. Communism is a coherent ideology. Terrorism is a label that we put on people that we'd like to attack or we don't like or we think are basically who we're afraid of.
Woodland Hills, California. Bruce is up with us now. Hi, Bruce. Go ahead.
Thank you, George. Okay. Interesting topics.
Sure is.
What I want to bring up is, and this is a perspective, what I see is going on. It seems like there is a major effort to keep the people of this country dumb, divided, and distracted. And here's my question. With all the stuff we hear about on the news, the mass shootings, North Korea, Russia, wars, all this stuff, terrorism, this stuff to me seems insignificant compared to a danger that we're all being blind to. And let me elaborate.
Sure.
We are right now on a sixth mass extinction. We're losing over 300 species of plant, insect, and animal per day. To put it in perspective, that's 15,000 times the normal extinction rate, or 1.5 million% above the normal extinction rate. Anyone who has any doubt, don't believe me. If you just search mass animal extinction 2017, you'll see all this stuff. Our air, soils are contaminated with toxic metals. There's programs going on that the public doesn't know about. And we're not going to be able to sustain any quality of life or any life for much longer. And we don't know about this. And the facts are there.
Right. Did you take a look at to the sequel to An Inconvenient Truth yet?
No, I have not seen that, no.
It's very good. It's actually kind of frightening. Al Gore tries to, you know, in the end, he tries to pick it up a little bit and be hopeful, but they do show some amazing evidence of all kinds of aspects of global environmental change, and I assume that's what you're talking about, that the species are being wiped out because of various things, man-made things that are being put in the environment or whatever we're doing.
William, when you were putting together Democracy Betrayed, was there anything you came across that shocked you that you might not have known about?
Well, yeah. I mean, I was shocked by the... one thing in particular shocked me. It was that the FBI had hired a lot of informants to go to mosques and to try and see if they could gin up some terrorism. And there were a number of cases where the government actually provided the money to the so-called terrorists, trained them ideologically, got them the weapons, and then busted them just as they were about to do it. And I just thought that was kind of entrapment. That was one thing that surprised me. I suppose in putting the book together, another thing that surprised me was that the phenomenon I was seeing, which is the rise of the security surveillance state mm-hmm. in America, was also happening in France, particularly in Britain, to some extent in Germany and in Australia. So all, when you think of the Western European countries, there is a kind of a broad attack on our freedoms going on, and it's being actually done by the state in the name of security. That was the big conclusion that I came to.
And they're getting away with it.
Well, they appear to be. I mean, if you think we need a million and a half people with top secret security clearances, I can't imagine what they'd be looking at.
That's right. Let's go out to Utah. Dean's with us, first-time caller. Dean, go ahead.
Well, Max, I've been listening to you guys since the mid-'90s, so it's
Thank
been a
you,
while.
Dean. Appreciate
yeah,
it.
I'm just a stone throw away from that spy center. And I don't know if your guest do you know what the website is for that spy center? Because I do.
Which one is it?
Which website?
No, which spy center are you talking about?
Well, the
brand new one, right?
That's built up in Bluffdale area.
Uh-huh.
The new one.
I haven't looked at it yet, but
they have a website, know. Dean.
Yeah, but I don't want to say the whole thing, you know, over the.
No,
air.
I understand. But why would they have a website, for crying out loud?
Well, because there's all kinds of people that have access to this thing, and here's just some of the. It's 14 letters long, or 13 letters and a symbol long, but some of it very disturbing what it spells out. CIA, ISIS. And anyway, some of it stands for the Confidential Information Association and Interstate Identification Index. So
in the time we have left here, William, where do you think this is all headed for all of us as Americans?
Well, I just think, you know, that you've got to think about it this way. If you add up all the internal security and intelligence nodes or buildings around the country, it adds up to about 5.5 pentagons. There are literally hundreds of sites all around the nation. And as a professor, I would say, of international affairs, about half of my master's students wanted to join the intelligence agencies because they were the only ones that were hiring at the time. So where I think it's going for all of us, I think that we're going to have increasingly fewer, that's a bad way to put it. We're going to have fewer and fewer freedoms. We're going to be monitored more closely in the future. And so that's why I urge people to use your vote, use your connections with friends, call your congressman, do all the things that we do in this society to stop things we don't like. Organize, you know, get this together, because once we lose the basic freedoms that are in our Constitution to the security state, the state within a state, then we'll have something that is pretty much like a secure democracy or an authoritarian democracy. It might be like India, where everybody votes, but you don't have any rights.
Well, that could very well happen. William, thanks for being on the program. Up next, what the bleep do we know? We're going to talk about that when we come back.